if you're listening to that music, then you're listening to The High Spot, folks. Episode 11. Yes, it's been a long time coming. We've taken our time to really think about what we want to talk about. No fault of our own. But at the same time, my tag team partner, Jeff Martin, here. I am Brian Brigga, your host as well. This is The High Spot. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Jeff, I haven't seen you in a long time. How's everything?
I know, you've changed. How are the wife and kids?
I have wife and kids?
But I will guarantee you this. Well, you should know more than me.
That's how out of it
I am. But we guarantee you this. This show will be much more entertaining than the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight this past Saturday. I guarantee you.
Well, we won't be hugging each other the entire time.
And we have to charge you $100.
Yes, this is actually for free, so you're getting a deal, folks. This should be actually cost $100 for you to listen to, but you're actually getting it for free, so be thankful of that. Jeff, so much has gone on. I could, you know, be exaggerant of everything that's happened, but at the same time, it's not being exaggerant. So much stuff has gone on in these past couple of weeks that it's kind of like, where do you start from?
What an amazing Saturday we had this past Saturday. I mean, this will go down as probably, if you're a sports fan, you had NHL playoffs, you had the Kentucky Derby, you had a huge, well, fight, the anticipation of a mega fight between Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. You had so much going on, the NFL draft. I mean, if you were a sports junkie, all you had to do was give the wife and kids, you know, give the wife the credit card, you know, tell her to take the kids, and let me be on that Saturday because you had everything, and not to mention a great Game 7 between the Clippers and the Spurs. So we got NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs to talk about. We got the NFL draft to talk about. And we got the fight that turned out to be a huge letdown. So tons of stuff, Bri. Tons of stuff to get into. But, well, what do we have to talk about, though, to start off the show? Deflategate.
Yeah, Jeff. Unbelievably, this story has not gone away. It's kind of died down a little bit. We're still aware of it. We didn't think anything was going to come about it anytime soon. But 4 months later, we have a
250 page report.
Takes a lot of time. Takes a long time to type that, I'm sure. And we finally have it. God bless you, those who can read 253 pages from front to back. But we've gotten some tidbits of it. And Jeff, this is something that, when it first happened, we talked about it on the show. We're like, you know, will the New England Patriots ever learn their lesson? I mean, do they have to go to these lengths, which shows the insecurity of them, whether it be Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, when we're kind of accusing them that they had to know what was going on. Is it that much for you to, for example, cement a legacy or try to have some type of a dynasty to go through those lengths to win? Now, everybody will probably say, you know, on Twitter, when you can listen to us at High Spot Podcast, we'll write in saying, you know, in this world, you do everything it takes to win. If you're not caught, then you're not cheating type of thing. You can use all
no
those
cheating,
monikers.
Not trying.
Exactly. If you're not cheating, you're not trying either. At the same token, it's like you're at this point. You've reached a certain amount of success. Are you that desperate now? And maybe, you know, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have seen the fact that they're in the twilight maybe of their head coaching and quarterback careers, that they want that one last shot of glory. But at the same time, is the juice worth the squeeze?
You were just waiting to say that. You
have no idea how long I've been waiting to use that moniker. It never worked, that saying, in anything I ever did. But at least in this time, it made sense.
How about this? Do you think that Bill Belichick or Tom Brady like have the NFL rule book, and during the off season or maybe on a day where they got nothing to do, which for Tom Brady, I find that hard to believe. But do you think honestly that they look at the rule book and they're like, oh, ooh, this looks good. This doesn't really, you know, this isn't really that strict on a rule book, or this is not strict on the rules, or hey, I can circumvent it this way to our advantage. How petty are the Patriots here? And you know what? I'm not.
And folks, you might think Jeff's being sarcastic, but he's probably not, because most likely Bill Belichick and the entire Patriots organization sit down with the rule book, read it from cover to cover, and say, you know, what can we get away with?
Exactly. And that's just sad. And not all Jeff fan being myself aside, you know, let's call it like we see him, okay?
Well, you don't have to be a Jeff fan to hate the Patriots.
No, we know of any fan, except you're a Giant fan, you have all the success in the world against the Patriots. So I think the Giants are the only team that really could give a, you know, could not give a hoot about this whole situation. But let me call it like I see it, and I will call them this. They're cheaters. And at the end of the day, that's what they are. They cheat. Whether it's videotaping St. Louis Rams practice during the Super Bowl, whether it's, you know, videotaping the Jets, whether it's, you know, not calling offensive guys eligible during the Ravens playoff game. No matter what, to me, at the end of the day, Tom Brady cheated. And does it hurt his legacy? Listen, to me, Tom Brady deflating footballs will not, to me, make me think any less of him as a quarterback. But the human being and just the fact that, you know, and I don't even call this gamesmanship. I just think it's breaking the rules. And, you know, the Ravens were tipped off by the Colts or vice versa. And people know about this. And when you leave the Patriots, when you leave the organization, people don't want it done to them. So then stuff leaks out. No pun intended about anything leaking out. Only footballs. But Mangini...
Nice catch there.
...told on them when he was with the Jets. And this has gone on long enough. And for Roger Goodell to now hang this on Troy Vincent and the Players Association, what are they going to do? You really think they're going to go there and suspend Tom Brady? Fine them, yes, but they're not going to suspend Tom Brady. First of all, it hurts their TV viewership. Because the AFC East is going to be amazing. And I think everyone wants to see Tom Brady get his rear end kicked by the defensive line now in the AFC with the Jets, Bills, and the Dolphins. Right? So I don't want him suspended because I want to see actually Tom Brady and the Patriots struggle against this solid, solid AFC East. So what are you going to do? Do you fine them? Do you take away a draft pick? That's what I would do. I would draft them. I mean, about, I would say like $500,000 because it affects the competitiveness of the game. And I would take the first-round draft pick away. I mean, you need to make an example that this is just garbage, and this is, you know, it's just utter nonsense now with the Patriots.
I mean, you could go to that route, Jeff, where you take around, you take the first-round pick away, you take, you know, you fine them. But at the same time, with suspending Tom Brady, if he is proven, now here's the thing, this is all speculation. Not speculation of the text messages. We've seen the text messages. We've seen the content which was written from Tom Brady to the equipment managers. It looks suspicious. And it sounds suspicious when you read it. But at the same time, everybody's perspective is different. You know, they could be talking about something completely different. It just makes sense in terms of the context of what we're talking about. It's like he sends a text message to the equipment manager. You must have a lot of stress getting those balls ready. You know, no laughing matter here.
Yeah, Jim McNally, also a.k.a. the deflator.
Exactly. Which he gave himself that nickname, which made no sense whatsoever. I guess he wanted his 15 seconds of fame. But at the same time, we can only take from the context of what's going on with the deflated footballs to, you know, those messages. And it just sounds very suspicious. But still, Tom Brady, to this point, still hasn't been proven guilty of anything. He's been proven he's lied about what he said in terms of not having any knowledge about it.
But he's had to know, right?
He's got to know, but at the same time, people would say, well, he knows it, but he wasn't the one doing the action.
He would not cooperate. Well, no, but I mean, he had to be, I think, the mastermind, though. He doesn't have to actually do anything because he's Tom Brady. He doesn't want to get his hands dirty, so he had his minions do his dirty work. But my question
to
you is...
And that's how you get away with stuff. If your hands aren't in the cookie jar, then you're really not to blame. I could say, hey, Jeff, take something from me. No, it was my fault. I'm the one who organized it.
Yeah, the trail doesn't lead to you.
Exactly.
But the question to you that I posed before I asked you the question is, let's look at the timeline. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Colts complained about deflated balls. Then Tom Brady has the balls enough to come out to the media and say, I don't know anything about this. You know, have that sad puppy dog look on his face. Great acting job, Tom, but I didn't believe a minute of it. And, you know, we go from there to letting them play in the Super Bowl. And the NFL, all they had to do is, look, you guys are fined X amount of money, and you can lose a draft pick. If they would have solved it then, it could have been a third-round draft pick, a fifth-round draft pick, and that would have been the end of it. But it went this far, 4 freaking months, and then you get 250 pages. And my question to you is, does it hurt Tom Brady's legacy as a quarterback? I think no. It hurts him on integrity as a man, but not as a quarterback. What do you think?
We could talk about the integrity of the man. To me, I think it does tarnish his legacy in a bit. Not tarnish in terms of his accomplishments, because he's done them regardless. You can't take those away. This is the same situation I have when we talk about, for example, you know, steroids and human growth hormones in baseball. This is a tarnished record. In this case, it does tarnish it. It puts an asterisk behind everything Tom Brady's ever done. And unless he comes on,
you don't know how far back he's done this.
But that's the thing, too. We're only hearing about this now, Deflategate. How much do we hear about Spygate, which was several years past that? We don't know how long this has gone on, where the Patriots have used the, whether it be the rule book, whether they use certain things to their advantage. So at the same time, I have a right to say that from the beginning of his career, when Drew Bledsoe was knocked down and started from there, his first Super Bowl victory to that point on till now, who knows how honest and legitimate it's been. We don't know that.
As far as, it doesn't have to be just football, you're talking about the videotaping of the Rams.
Yeah.
At the Super Bowl, you're talking about the videotaping of the Jets. Yeah. So, okay.
Because I'm looking at this more at this perspective, Jeff, that, for me, Tom Brady can be the nicest guy in the world. You know, all the players can respect him in the NFL, organizations, you know, charities, and things of that nature. To me, I don't worry so much about the man, Tom Brady. If he's a liar, he's a liar. Who cares? What it tarnishes more is his legacy, not as a man, but as a football player, as a representative of the National Football League. And over again, we hear these stinking, I'm sorry to use this language, these stinking broadcasters say, you know what, you got to protect that shield. I mean, what protection are you really doing?
There has been
from
a
the point
year
Roger Goodell has been commissioner of the league, and now he's got the gall. I was going to say balls, but, you know, it'd be
just
too funny.
Just say balls.
No, we've been using too many balls in this segment here. But for Roger Goodell to go out there and say, now this is an issue for the Players Association to deal with. I mean, you got to be freaking kidding me. I mean, every decision he's made from this point on, I'm not trying to switch this on Roger Goodell now, but has been a horrible decision. Fans hate him. They boo him out of the building anywhere he goes.
You can't wait,
and for Tom Brady,
wait to discipline players, and then you take 4 months on this. And
exactly.
Made it a bigger deal than it is.
He's so quick at firing the trigger on anything and making an example out of these players, supposedly to show that he's in charge and the league won't stand for any of this, right? So supposedly things that are not considered outside of the football world in terms of extracurricular activities you do when you're not on the field are a huge issue who wants to attack. So now, once the issue becomes something which is a conspiracy on the field, oh, it's the Players Association now to handle this. Bull. Complete bull, Roger Goodell. And Tom Brady tarnished his legacy in terms of that. Everything he's done or he accomplishes from this point on. And there's no doubt in my mind, before Spygate, before Deflategate, he was going to be an instant Hall of Famer. Now, he'll probably be to the point where he's really proven that he knew about this and allegedly knew all these things from all the text messages that are going out, which he refused to relinquish.
See, that's where I, as a man, question his integrity, and that's where I think he loses points in my book. As far as all the...
But how much is the integrity of a man that important in terms of on the football field, of all his accomplishments? Because that's what his legacy is based on.
Well, see, to me, though, the idea that Tom was like Tom Terrific and he was this great guy, this competitor, and he has kind of have like an aura about him, you know? So the great Tom Brady. So listen, just because he deflated some footballs and he saw some video of some defense, he still had to go out there and do the job. And I really find it hard to believe that I'm going to question his legacy by footballs. So I'm not going to do that. But when he has the gall to, you know, meet the media and lie to them or not be truthful, and that's to me where he lied to my face. And then when this comes out, you've basically lied to the media, the whole country, and just everybody in general. And so that, to me, is where I question his integrity. And, I mean, it's just, you know what, when you lie, and no matter what you do, you're better off just admitting it, because all it can only do is, like, you know, the snowball, just a little avalanche, just grows and grows and grows, because this humongous snowball, and the next thing you know, it just gets on top of you. Well, congratulations, come on top of you, because not only has it questioned his integrity as a man, but like you said, you have every right to question his integrity as a football player. But I'm going to go in the aspect of like, wow, you know what, this is a guy that I thought that was on the up and up, and it's just a little disappointing to me that, you know, he had to stoop this low to get a competitive advantage.
Well, let me ask you this question, Jeff. You talked about how you look at this more as a tarnish on in terms of Tom Brady's integrity.
I'm disappointed in the guy.
How many times, I understand that, how many times do we see professional athletes in any sport? They look like model citizens, and then we find out they have, you know, skeletons in the closet, as everybody does, except me and Jeff. And we see them in a different light. But yet people are willing enough to forgive people, say, you know, I was in court, I was testifying, or I was in a report, or I did a documentary, and I lied. and I'm sorry. And they give a reason why they did it, for fear or, you know, controversy, not wanting to embarrass themselves, the organization, or shameful. And people are willing to forgive that.
But yeah, then when come clean in the beginning. Again, it's all snowballed on him. He should have taken care of it in January, and that would have been the end of it.
Okay, and people are willing to forgive that. But they don't forget. So say if Alex Rodriguez came out and horrible example because he's lied all the time.
It all
but
comes this, back it, to A-Rod.
But at this time, who knows how many times Tom Brady has lied. The moment your trust is broken, you have to question everything else about
it. And that's why. I can't trust him now.
And to me, what tarnishes more is, at the end of the day, we know all the greats, like Joe Montana, Joe Namath, to name a few, Jerry Rice. I'm sticking on the 49ers here for some reason. Lawrence Taylor, all these great men in the sport of football. But when we think about it, what do we remember most about them? What they did on the field. You ask anybody, if any great legend in the NFL Hall of Fame, like, they remember this player at this time, in this particular date, when they did a particular thing, right? Now, that's what their legacy is. In terms of what they did, whether they were, you know, they had dealt with issues with the police, dealt with issues with cops, anything like that, doesn't matter. And the thing is, that's interesting about this is, everything else they've done before that is tarnished. So their legacy is what they do on the field. So now that's why I get back to the point, Jeff. Now Tom Brady has shown he's lied. He knew about the footballs, or there's speculation he didn't know about it. We have Spy here. So now I just question the entire New England Patriots plus Tom Brady's legacy in terms of how legitimate is it. You said you have to go out there and execute. Yes, you have to go out there and execute no matter what. Whether you had tape or the balls were deflated, you still have to execute the plays to win. That's what a lot of people will say. But still, if I have more information than you to make a decision, then I have more of an advantage than you. Granted, I still have to execute it.
You know, I get where you're going with it. I totally understand. Like, the same thing, like, I would say, like, if he does the steroids, he still has to hit the ball and hit the home run. I get that. And some, you know, those athletes are gifted with that ability to do it. And, you know, the steroid helps them out. But to me, if football to me is a little bit more different, just because in the aspect that the quarterback position is so important, and I just think that now, like, you can get all the film you want, but again, the execution, and again, I'm going to, like, get it all twisted here, but into me, I just find it hard to believe that those advantages would be more than if you took steroids. You know, I totally...
It's still a performance enhancement. If I have more information, I have the ability to have more of an advantage, that it's all about performance enhancing. I have a more advantage, whether it be physically, mentally, game plan-wise, I have more of an advantage than you do.
I just find it hard to believe. I'm not going to question him as a football player, but I'm more going to question him as far as, like, you know, as integrity and being honest and being the Tom Brady that I thought we were. But shame on me.
Yeah, you're a cookie cutter guy.
Shame on me for believing that, you know, Tom Brady was this, you know, stoic, good, fair playing gentleman.
It's a pipe dream, Jeff. It's always been a pipe dream.
And shame on me for believing in
that we hold in such high regard just are not what they expect to be. But talk about, you know, questioning things. The thing I question the most is that, you know, this whole thing about Roger Goodell, the Player Association, you know, attacking all these issues outside of football and now, you know, leaving this to like 4 months to happen. And yet the NFL still to this day punishes other teams when they should be punishing the New England Patriots. Perfect example, your New York Jets get punished for something that was completely $100,000
because Woody Johnson. Bullshit. Yeah, $100,000 because Woody Johnson in a, it's kind of State of the Union, towards the end of this past season, and believe me, the Jeff fans wanted him to say something, and all he said, yeah, of course we want Revis back. We would want Revis back. Now, Woody Johnson is not the most guy who loves to get in front of the mic, but, you know, he said what he felt. And I think the NFL should have given him a pass, but because the stinking Patriots complained, you know, boom, they get hit with a $100,000 fine. And then the Jets, everyone calls the Jets petty because they filed tampering charges on the Patriots. Instead of saying touche, well played, everybody is like, oh God, Woody Johnson, the Jets. That's why they're the Jets, because they're petty. They're as petty, okay, fine, as the Patriots were. I mean, the Patriots are super petty, and for Robert Kraft to be like, oh, there's still no hard evidence, you got a 250-page report that cost $5 million of the NFL's money, by the way, to get this done, where you could have had me and you do it for $25, and we could have written the report on a piece of confetti, and got it done with maybe like a couple days. But this is the NFL for you. This whole last pass off season, and this heading into the following season, has just been a big joke. It's been a joke. I was thinking to myself, wow, the NFL just had like 6 weeks of buzz because the NFL draft, and that's over with. And, you know, that's
a different type of buzz.
Wait. Yeah. And today, I'm thinking, wow, man, the NFL for like a week is not going to have enough coverage. I was thinking maybe you should put the third or fourth round next week. You know, so like maybe you have the first or second rounds on a Thursday and Friday. And then next week on a Saturday, you have the rest of the rounds in the NFL, because the NFL just seems to try to make money any way it can. And I'm thinking, man, for a whole week, there's nothing really NFL to talk about. You know, a free agency is done, and so is a draft. And, you know, now the teams are settling in with the OTAs and the mini camps. But then I'm like thinking, wow, no headlines. And then this comes up. It's like wow. It's like the NFL planned, you know, like, okay, so now draft is over. Let's talk about Deflategate. And let's bring this up. Oh, what a coincidence. The Ted Wells report came out today on a slow NFL week. And here you go.
Television and radio are so thankful right now for this to happen. And maybe it's, you know, the NFL throwing themselves a bone and strategically planning this. But something you said before, we were spending 6 weeks talking about the NFL draft, about all the high prospects.
Finally came, and last Saturday again was part of that huge Saturday. And again, you as a football fan, what did you think? I thought the hype, we didn't get that many trades. We thought it was going to be a flurry of activity for that second pick, but it turned out the Titans took their pick, didn't trade anything, and we got a ho-hum first round of the draft.
I thought that was very subdued. The hype, you know, and, you know, we were talking about the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, too. It was in that same week of how excited everybody was for it. Everybody's kind of excited for this. The NFL draft moved to a different venue. It wasn't in Radio City anymore. It was in Chicago, Illinois. Great atmosphere. I guess now it's become a bidding war, kind of like the Super Bowl and WrestleMania. We're going to have the draft. And the same respects, although we spent time talking about, you know, the types of talent that's in this draft pool and, you know, where they would go and what would happen if certain players got taken early, who knows if somebody would trade up. It kind of went very quickly, and so quick to the point that they were actually delaying picks, if you had noticed. I had noticed that, like, picks were in, and they're still taking 10 minutes to give out the name, I guess, just for TV purposes, to extend it longer. And to me, it was hyped up so much, and at the end of the day, you know, Winston went first, Mariota went second, and then after that...
Mariota.
I said it right. Roger Goodell.
Roger Goodell called him and apologized, but forever in time, unless you try to edit that thing out, it's going to be Mariota. And I feel bad for...
Mariota.
For Mariota on two reasons, because his name got butchered and he's going to Tennessee, which I think is just, to me, it's not the right place where he needs to go for him to be a successful quarterback. I don't like that pick as far as his aspect of where he's going. I would have been so upset knowing I was going to go to Tennessee. Nothing wrong with the town, nothing wrong with just the team and what they have. I just don't see it as being a perfect fit for the coach, and I don't see it being a fit for him himself.
Yeah, talk about insult to injury. That couldn't have been a worse situation for him to be put in, but in that token, if you're the Tennessee Titans, You pick the best available player, and the need you need right now, which is a quarterback, and Marcus Mariota was the best selection, I guess, at that time for the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, we'll see what happens in terms of offensive schemes and how you work Marcus Mariota in that type of organization in terms of scoring points and having offense and building a team around him. But yeah, Roger Goodell, another embarrassment. You know, he just pours fuel onto the fire himself, you know, and then you can't feel sorry for him when he does, and when he butchers a player's name, which is his responsibility. Now, I can butcher players' names because I avidly admit I stink at pronouncing names. You know, I'm surprised I even got past the fifth grade, but still, I got past it. You know, this is his job.
How about the
booze? This is his job, and he can't do it well.
I think that's what upset him a little bit, the booze. You're Roger Goodell.
Well, he better get used to it.
He came up there.
He better get used to it.
Booed him mercifully. I think kind of like jarred him a little bit, but damn, wow, I've never seen anybody. I've seen Batman get booed, you know, here in New Jersey, and we have the reasons why. But man, I don't think there's a more unpopular commissioner right now than Roger Goodell. And I'm trying to like the guy, but when he's making $40 million
a year. Why do you want
to
try to like him?
Because I don't see how. Yeah, I like Adam Silver. I think Adam Silver's done a great job.
After everything that he's done to this point on, why would you want to try to still like Roger Goodell?
Because, I mean, the commissioners, you know, I just think that they do have a hard job. But I just think, like, look, Adam Silver acted with the whole Donald Sterling case quick, swift. Okay, and just Roger Goodell, to me, my first impression was I liked the guy. But then again, just with the whole Ray Rice and everything like that, just you know, it just kind of turned me off a little bit.
Well, it's different to like somebody, for example, like Adam Silver, who handled the whole situation with the Los Angeles Clippers. He swiftly did it, stands by his decision, right? But you have a guy like Roger Goodell that comes out, you know, makes a decision, then backtracks, tries to change the rules, and then does everything to stay face.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a tough time. But honestly, he's protected by the owners.
Yeah.
They love him because he's bringing in, he's money. Raking in, they're raking in cash and everything. You could put the, like, we're talking about a long time, we could put the NFL logo on for 20 minutes, sell it to CBS, and it'd still, you know, make money hand over fist just by putting the logo on, the shield on TV for like 20 minutes. But
yeah, but for me, like I said, just closing, you know, it was exciting, build up to it, but at the same time, like the Mayweather-Baggett fight, didn't live up to the hype.
How about Leonard Williams going to my JETS, 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 Jets at 6? That defensive line is going to be crazy. I don't want to hear people saying, oh, but that's not your need. You know what? That is going to be a crazy defensive line. And not only that, but you protected your ass, because what if Wilkerson wants to leave? You can't pay him all that money, because to me, he's a good player, but he's not a great player. And now you hold the cards. Hey, listen, Mo, you're playing with us, but you know what? You're easily replaced, because if Leonard Williams turns out to be the guy that fell in their lap at number 6, who most people had him first or third as far as talent on that draft as their player, then they just got a steal. And I think Mike Maccagnan, kudos to you. I want to just say thank you, because there's actually a GM that has a plan and knows what he's doing. He's actually didn't trade picks away. He actually was able to get a running back with a 7th-round pick. And, I mean, he just did a great job. And Bryce Petty in the 4th round. Who knows what he's going to be? But I think Mike Maccagnan had a very, very good draft and a very good start to his tenure as general manager.
Well, I wouldn't thank Maccagnan just yet, Jeff. You know, you've even said to me before, and I'm sure a lot of Jet fans will hit us up on Twitter at High Spot Podcast and say, you know what? You know, crazy things have happened where things actually look good at the end. It's still the Jets. So we'll wait and see. But
oh, you're trying to rain on my parade, man.
Well, hey,
I'm actually positive about my team.
Me.
And you tell me, Jeff, you're so negative about it. Well, why can't you just... And I'm giving Mike Maccagnan kudos, because I think he did a good job. He didn't panic. He didn't, you know, go crazy like Tannenbaum and give picks away. Or, you know, I think he did a good job. Okay. If I were to give him a grade, I'd say A, B plus.
Okay. Well, I'm just keeping the reality here for the fact that you always like to keep the reality too. Whenever I try to give some positive light on the Jets, you throw that back in my face. So,
and Jerry,
you
know, Reese, what?
How does it feel?
Decent,
how does it feel being thrown back in your face? Not too good, huh?
Not too good.
Good, huh? No, typical Jet fan. But anyway,
how about Jerry Reese? He had a good draft.
Well, yeah, but the thing with the Jets that I want to get before you start shoving the Giants in my face, Jeff, is the fact that you know, great move here. They got so much leverage now that if Wilkerson wants to leave, or they have the ability to trade him away, you can get something for him. Or
you don't
have to worry about him like throwing the dollar sign on you, holding you handicapped and holding you hostage. Because now the Jets have leverage. If this pick lives up to the hype, and again, I'm sure they would have wanted to go offense. I thought that's what I kind of thought I was going. But when Winston and Mariota left,
Kevin White was there,
and then Amari Cooper was gone from
Kevin
the board.
Kevin White was there, and I was like, okay, you know, but.
Again, that's what I thought too, but at the same time, made more sense for the Jets that they're building up this defense to be more dominant. And you know what? They still have some good offensive pieces anyway to work with.
Look, Jerry Reese, and the Giants have made it perfectly clear: you can never have enough D linemen or defensive ends. You can't have enough. You can't have enough of a good thing when it comes to that, because that is to pressure the quarterback and be able to do it from your defensive line and ease off the pressure in your secondary. But the Jets have an amazing secondary to begin with. It just makes that team so solid. And at that point, you take the best available player. And if Leonard Williams, from all the accounts that we've heard and seen, is the best player on that board, you got to take him.
There's no doubt about
Unless
that.
Unless you get blown away with a trade. But, I mean, kudos for the Jets. I don't know about the second-round pick. I don't know about Devin Smith. You know, there's a couple other receivers. But, look, they have Brandon Marshall, Decker. And they also have Curley. This guy is a speed burner. A lot of people compare him to Torrey Smith. If Geno can get him the ball downfield, it was a great pick.
Whether it be Geno, Fitzpatrick, who knows? They have weapons on offense. And again, at the same time, you can never have enough weapons on defensive line. But again, it looks like they're going back to the formula they had once with Rex Ryan.
It looks like Geno's the guy, though.
Yeah. That formula that they took him to 2 AFC championship games. And it seems like Geno will be leading the way. But again, who knows? Still a long way from now to, you know, OTAs till training camp starts. We'll see what happens there, but supposedly Gina's the man now. As for the Giants, like you were talking about before.
Eric Flowers.
There's nothing more you can say about it. It wasn't a It was a good draft for the Giants, in my opinion, but at the same time, it was nothing, for example, special or exciting or something you looked at and were like, wow, that was a shock. Or now, you know, their second round pick, the safety they got from Alabama.
Collins,
that was kind of a shock. They were still available there. But then if you're the Giants, you have no choice. You have to be aggressive and get it.
Did you ever see that video with Collins? He was picking his school. He was with his mother.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And she was like, LSU.
She's still bitter about that.
She is. LSU. And he pulled out the Alabama glove. And she's like, oh my God. Kind of looked like that video.
She's gonna faint, probably.
Of the mom beating up her kid. It was so funny. She still holds a grudge about that.
Well, you know, the moms are going to be like that. They want what's best, what they feel is best for their kid. But again, he's a grown man. He knew what he wanted to do. He wanted to go that route. And at the end of the day, it got him into the National Football League. So as much as you might be bitter or might hold it against him, you know, I'm sure it's not too bad because he's a second round pick.
I'm sure when he buys his mom that house that she's always wanted, I'm pretty sure she's going to forget.
So he'll dress it up in LSU colors for her and have LSU memorabilia around. But that was a great thing. And here, I was always thinking, like, if Amari Cooper's there, oh, what do you do?
Shame on us for thinking Amari Cooper was going to drop.
And Kevin White was actually there too. He was taken by the Chicago Bears right before, because I was thinking that was a viable option too in terms of their wide receiver core, because you didn't know if Victor Cruz was going to be 100% for the offseason or be the same type of player he was, because there's question marks with his knee. But you know, Brandon Scherff left early.
Yeah, that was probably a tough one. That was a high pick.
Because I knew they're going to go offensive line. You had to review the Giants right now. Last two seasons, they've been horrible offensively, couldn't run the ball, can't protect Eli. You hope this will be a bounce back year for Eli, has some time and some protection. But the Giants did exactly what I thought they should have done. And you know, a lot of you know, experts gave them A+ for the draft, B's, you know, no C's. So they filled in their positions offensively. They filled in positions they needed, especially with the depleted secondary under Spagnuolo for their safety and strong safeties. And you know, they did smart moves. Now how it comes in the offseason, there's still free agency. I mean, not free agency, there's still, you know, draft picks that can be signed as free agents, so we'll see how it all pans out for the Jets and Giants.
Yeah, and then they drafted in the third round a guy that Krusty the Clown was like,
I love that episode.
For the defensive end.
What was that
UCLA?
Russian girl?
Shushisha. It's kind of what it sounded his name
wasn't.
Like.
Wasn't he illiterate too? Like, how could he even read it? You didn't even know what the words meant.
Yeah,
you can pronounce it. That's a Simpsons.
Always
losing.
Good to throw a Simpsons question. But no,
that's awesome.
It's the first thing I thought of when I saw the guy's
that
name.
That rookie defensive lineman.
We're talking about
you know, Deflategate. How would you like to be the equipment? I gotta put that name on the back of that jersey. Do I have enough material to do that? It's ridiculous. But
I think it's gonna be good though.
Good. A lot of people kind of assimilate him like a kind of a Justin Tuck type of guy. He's still pretty green, and by green means he's still very young and inexperienced, folks. And, you know, will hopefully do well. I mean, when you're in a Steve Spagnuolo defense, and in this case, kind of the Jets defense, all you're getting asked to do is go after the quarterback. And if he's good at doing that and he's shown the ability, he has a huge, what they call in sports, motor. He doesn't stop, he keeps playing till the whistle. He'll be a great addition to the Giants.
Well said. Well said. You sound like a Giant fan.
Well, I had like 8 hours sleep, so I feel a bit good right now.
Rejuvenated.
I'm rejuvenated.
Like a phoenix rising.
It's a phoenix. Yes,
like
phoenix.
A phoenix rising in Arizona.
Not the seasons, Jeff.
No, not the seasons. Inside joke. But again, a lot of stuff in the NFL. Unfortunately, we had to start off with Deflategate. I'm pumped. I think my team had a great draft. What team do you think had a good draft, or what's the player that you think is going to make a quick impact in this draft?
I've always been a big advocate because I really wasn't. There wasn't really, like I said, shockers later on the rounds or picks. I mean, there are certainly some quarterbacks out there. And what surprised me the most before I get to your question was that the running backs weren't selected. Only two running backs in the first
round.
Todd
Gurley, though,
yeah,
taken 10 by the Rams, and he's not even going to.
And the Jets got Stacy via trade.
I think that was a great move.
That's an awesome move.
A seventh round pick for a guy who in his first year had 923 yards and like 8 touchdowns or so. I mean, that is a great. I was surprised. And then the thing is,
you talked about before, you can't have enough depth on the defensive line. You can't have enough depth on the running back position either.
Well, I mean,
it's
really,
it's not a one.
Yeah, yeah. Ridley's not going to come back anytime, like in probably October or late September. To me, Chris Ivory is.
It's a certain type of change of pace running back. He's not an everyday type
exactly.
of running back.
Exactly. And then Bilal Powell is Bilal Powell. So to me, you can't have enough depth. And what I like McCagney's is, well, the potential of the player over the, you know, the potential of Zach Stacy is to me worth making that trade.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. They're higher upside than as opposed to downside, and you know, in terms of getting a veteran that's probably maybe past or in the twilight of their career.
How about this? How about having a great GM who heard that Cleveland was going to try to trade up with Jacksonville to get to move up and get Bryce Petty, and Maccagnan was so aware of this that he made the trade with Jacksonville and he ended up taking Bryce Petty. How great is to have a GM that knows actually what's going on?
And that's another great example, too, in terms of depth. Very aware of what's going on around him to make Doesn't moves like phased? That and being aggressive. No, and at the same time, you can't be in this league, especially if you're GM, whether you're Jerry Reese or Maccagnan, because at the same time, you know, you're going to lose players that you want. Your board's going to be shuffled around because certain players are obviously thinking the same way you are. But at the same time, to have a plan B, a plan C, or a plan Q, you know, you have certain rules. You're not caught off guard. And that's what Maccagnan showed. And that's what kind of Jerry Reese showed a little bit here.
John Idzik, for him to have 12 picks last year, that draft, that 2014 draft is gonna haunt the Jets forever.
Well, it's an old regime, so it's a new one. It's kind of a rebuilding year, but like you even talked about those draft picks and wasted. Right now, the Jets, I think a little bit more than Giants, look a lot better in terms of where they were a year before than where they are now. Giants have a nicer upside in terms of if they've addressed some of their issues. Now we have to wait for those issues to pan out. The Jets kind of look like that team that's on the verge of kind of being there, whether it be next season or the following offseason. Right now it's the question of the quarterback position. But then picking up another quarterback in this draft, it just helps you out now because it proves one thing. Geno Smith, this job is yours to lose. So you better pick up
your
game.
There is no excuse.
Fitzpatrick is there. We're not high on him, but again, he's a valuable quarterback.
He's a game manager, and he's not incompetent, folks.
He's not competent.
I see people saying, oh, that's great, Jeff fans, but who's going to throw you the ball? All right, you know what? Geno's shown a flash, and I'll give, you know, I'm the biggest hater of Geno Smith, but he showed you some, in the last two games, he showed you some potential, and Fitzpatrick's won games in the NFL. I mean, I remember he threw 5 TDs, touchdowns last season.
Before he signed his contract for Buffalo, he's probably one of the highest rated quarterback ratings out there. Yeah.
I mean, come on, stop hating because, you know, your team or whatever like that didn't do enough moves, and you're hating on the Jets for having, like, you know, all-star team on defense. But, you know, moving that aside, we will re-energize ourselves, come back. We'll talk about the big box. Well, not the big boxing match, but the
big box office attraction.
At least. The big anticipation. And shame on me again because I fell for it. I was like, man, I can't wait. I actually, again, stupid me, believed that Pacquiao would find the answers for Mayweather, but that turned out to be a disaster in more ways than one. We'll talk about that. Get into some NBA, NHL, wrap it up with some MLB, early start of the season, some key things going on there. Lots to talk about. You're listening to The High Spot. Jeff Martin, Brian Berger, catch us on at High Spot Podcast. We'll be back. All right, you're listening to The High Spot. Jeff Martin and Brian Berger. You can catch us on at High Spot Podcast. We want to hear from you, folks. Enough about listening to us. We want to hear from you. We want to find out what you guys thought.
I never get tired of listening to us.
That's true. Well, but we
why
do
would
want
you
some
be tired of
we
listening
do want
to
some
us.
Interaction with the audience, though.
Yeah, that's true.
And we want to know what you thought of the fight, Mayweather and Pacquiao. We want to know what you think of this whole deflate gate. We will bring it up on our show. We will say, this person so-and-so said this and that, and
as the weeks go by, we'll know more of what's going on, because it's like an onion. It's starting to unravel more. It's starting to smell a lot more like Roger Goodell.
This guy, just with his metaphors, is just
right off the top of my head, too.
It's amazing. What goes on?
It's called ad-libbing.
Yeah. And so, right before we came back from break, you know, we were talking about the fight, and I tell you this, man, I was so psyched for this. And it wasn't just wasn't a boxing match, it was an event. So There's people that in the office saying, oh, man, you know, what are you doing for the fight? Oh, I'm going to a friend's house and this. I went to a friend's house, you know, a little barbecue, you know, a little beer, a little drinking, a little pre-gaming before, playing some video games, and then the fight, which I'm glad I didn't pay $100 for. So that's what I'm grateful for. And you watch it, you thought they're going to feel, you know, they're going to have something like a feeling out process. I don't want to say feel each other out because that sounds kind of weird.
That's kind of what happened.
There was going to be a feeling out process. And
we're so far-fetched on
so
that.
So first round, okay. Second round, third round, okay. And then it just, I was waiting for, now dancing the cha-cha-cha is Floyd Mayweather and his partner Manny Pacquiao. That's what I was waiting for. I was waiting for Dancing with the Stars or something like that because for the first couple rounds, Mayweather was, as soon as Pacquiao was trying to get an advantage, he would wrap up. And again, for the fan who thought that Mayweather was going to change his style or that Pacquiao was going to solve it, and I know a lot of people were leaning towards Pacquiao solving it, well, you got a typical Mayweather fight. And I tell you, it was so underwhelming. I was just like, you know, and I had people that were falling asleep during the fight. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, and you know what it was? It was the anticipation. It's like you know, you got all this adrenaline, and when you're bored to tears and you're disappointed, you're gonna drop. And I tell you what, the mood after that fight, it just killed the whole night. And to anybody, and the fan is the one that suffers the most that paid for that. It's just a horrible way to end. It was supposed to be a great sports night.
Jeff, a fight that should have happened, in my opinion, 4 or 5 years ago, which I've had arguments with colleagues and friends and just general people on the street because they stopped me and said they love listening to The High Spot, which you're listening to right now, and you can hit us up on at High Spot Podcast. They come up to me and say, you know what, if this happened 5 years ago, it wouldn't have lived up to the hype. It wouldn't have made as much money as now because it's taken 4 or 5 years to build up. And I was like, okay. But then what happens? You have a 4 or 5 year older version of Floyd Mayweather, of a Manny Pacquiao. Their likelihood of putting in a star-studded show, which in my opinion now, in terms of the world of professional boxing, I'm sure you know, now that their bodies aren't as healthy, you deal with injuries more and more because you don't heal as fast as you do as you get older. This match itself was to the point where I kind of was over it. I didn't think it was going to happen. And when it did, I was like, oh, okay, well, all right. And the way they promoted this was like, okay, they used those 3 or 4 years as a build-up for this on its own. And then kind of in 2 months, we're going to have this fight with no promotion from Showtime or HBO in terms of getting this out there. You have the access ability of watching, which Jeff and I did. Which
the better fight was between HBO and Showtime to get this done.
That was actually the more exciting fight in terms of how this is going to happen, especially last minute with the ticket sales and how this fight maybe wasn't fully signed. All that drama made it more exciting because you're thinking, wow, this is the only time we're probably ever going to watch this. Now, that's kind of thrown out of the water because there might be a rematch. Who knows?
Oh, my God. If they were in my backyard and it was going on and I saw everyone jamming into my backyard, I want to go see that fight. That was an utter disaster. And you know what? Let's get one thing straight. To me, everyone says Pacquiao is done. I truly believe he was injured. He should have not fought because now he's got this whole thing going on where if he knew he was hurt, he should have said something because a lot of people were, and I say Asher's gambling on this fight. And so let's put that aside. I don't think he was done. I just think, again, what bothers me is that you know the kind of fight that Mayweather is looking for. And again, I understand other people. I understand Canelo. I understand other people not being able to adjust. But I thought if anyone could have adjusted to Mayweather and given him a real run for his money, it would have been Pacquiao. And he did give
him some problems. He did catch him. I mean, everybody's talked about how Mayweather, he beats you to the punch. It's really hard to deal with his speed. Pacquiao is just as fast, but the same token, he caught him a couple times. Now, you can question whether Pacquiao had power. His shoulder maybe was bothering him, so maybe that was his power arm that he couldn't really kind of generate the power.
Yeah, but again, don't fight. I don't want to hear that, though, after the fight. I don't want to hear, I was hurt and stuff like that, because you know what? Then that's being unfair to the viewer. And then the worst thing is when Mayweather comes up to Pacquiao and the first thing he says is, we made a lot of money. That was just an even bigger slap to the face to everybody there. And I mean, to me, I don't care.
Because we're not naive to think that these boxers are doing it for the fans. They're doing it for the money.
No, at the end of the day. Oh, and then again, they look like they could have gotten showered, gone to the casinos, and partied all night because they had no welts of whatsoever, no marks, anything at all. And I know I'm a fighting fan, and I'm not looking for blood, and I'm looking for deep cuts. But you'd like to see, you know, hey, we're in the business of boxing. You'd like to see there be some love scars or something like that on their face, but nothing.
You want to see that they had a day's work in,
exactly.
But yeah, like I said, this should have happened so long time ago. I was kind of over it. And the match was kind of, believe it or not, Jeff, what I expected. I really didn't. Maybe 5 years ago, I would have thought Manny Pacquiao had the speed to kind of compete with Floyd Mayweather and give him problems. But at this point, when he lost to Marquez, you know, and the controversial bouts he had with Bradley, just didn't live up to the hype because a lot of people were expecting more than what they should have expected.
Now, when
this match happened exactly like I thought it would, I knew Mayweather was going to be hugging him. I knew he was going to be holding. And I knew the referee was constantly going to be in there, you know, very delayed, letting them try to work out of it. And it was going to just ruin the fight. Pacquiao had opportunities, and what Pacquiao did, which surprised me the most out of anything, not just disappointed me, is that Pacquiao didn't take advantage of it. Now, whether it be injury or mentality or what, he said he moved around, he thought he did enough to win the fight. To me, that's utter nonsense. I don't know what fight Manny Pacquiao was fighting in his mind. But when you look at it, looking back at it, or when you're if you're watching at that time, Manny had opportunities and he froze.
And Freddie Roach, just enough. You, a million times you thought you had the blueprint for Mayweather, and you don't.
Okay? Del Hoya has a blueprint for Mayweather.
And you know what's the best part of all that?
He's the only guy that's had someone of a shot against Mayweather.
You gotta watch this. I don't know if they still have it, but you need to go to HBO, and kudos to HBO, is much better at boxing than Showtime. Let's be honest. And I don't want to give credit to everybody. But Jim Lampley, right, the night before, I think this is what got me amped up. They had Mosley and De La Hoya, and they had a bunch of people that fought both guys, like Cotto, Hatton, and Marquez. And they asked them to fight, you know, who's
the
win.
Who's who, like the round
and then
table.
You, and then you had...
Roy Jones is on there too, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. And then Max Kellerman had Lennox Lewis, George Foreman, and Bernard Hopkins, and they give their take. And I'm telling you what, they did such a great job hyping it up. Okay, and kudos to them, because Showtime to me did absolutely freaking nothing.
They should have got the money.
Showtime's thing was all Mayweather, and maybe you saw Pacquiao's face for like 2 seconds at the end of the close. Okay, so HBO knows how to do it. Okay, and they had me pumped. Foreman was saying this could be the number three fight, you know, second to the Ali Frazier. And I'm like, wow, you know what? It might. And then Bernard Hopkins saying how important it is for Pacquiao to get the first shot. And then Lennox Lewis comparing him and Tyson and seeing all the promos and then seeing Oscar De La Hoya and Mosley dissect the fight and actually talk about both their styles because they both got in the ring with them. Mm. And then seeing Cotto and Hatton and all them giving their opinions. I was pumped. And kudos to the only person in that party that I went to that said Mayweather, the missus, she said Mayweather all the way. And she kind of was like deflating everybody because we all were with our hearts saying Pacquiao, but in our brains were like, Mayweather. But no, she right down from the second we walked in to the second we left, whatever, and she was like, I told you so. Kudos to her. Mayweather won.
Yeah, and like I said, it wasn't far-fetched. People were expecting this glorified slugfest. That wasn't going to happen. Mayweather is going to do what he did before. And early in his career, Mayweather was the kind of slugger that would go out there very aggressively at you. And that was, you know, part of Pacquiao's repertoire. He's that aggressive guy. He never lays off. He punches from weird angles. But at the same time, what's his biggest gripe? He allows himself the ability to be countered because he's too aggressive to a point where he's sloppy. He's dangerous when he does that because he allows himself to get countered and probably get knocked out again. And what does Mayweather do? Defensive specialist. So for the pure boxing purist, I think in my opinion, they love this fight because it demonstrated...
I don't think anybody loved that fight. You could be a purist up the wazoo, like your boys that talk on a certain channel. But to me, there was... if anybody says that this was a anybody's kind of... I know people say defense wins championships, and it does, but anybody who thought this fight was entertaining needs to get their head examined, because it was not at all entertaining.
But it's not entertaining from that perspective, Jeff, that we didn't see punches, we didn't see people get dazed or knocked down or altercations, like little rallies towards the end of the rounds. We saw what Mayweather does better than anybody. He controls the distance, he works that jab, he counters with a cross, and then he controls you, grabs you, rabbit punches. Theoretically, technically, as a boxer, technically sound, that's the best you can get in terms of
boxing.
Would
that have worked in the 80s and 70s and 80s? Would that have gotten Mayweather anywhere? Or do you think the likes of Tommy Hearns, Hagler, and Duran, and Leonard, do you think they would have taken advantage of it?
Well, now that's different, though, because when we get into that aspect of it, for example, Hagler, Leonard, Durant were not the same size body type of Floyd Mayweather, so I don't think they would have allowed him to get away with that.
Right.
At that time, yeah, different eras. But again, this is where we'll get to the point, folks, where we'll start comparing, you know, is Mayweather the greatest of all time? Is he top 10 type of thing? I think he's the best boxer in this modern era that we've been around in terms of boxing, the best in the world in that. But in terms of, you know, he has the ability now to tie Rocky Marciano for 49 consecutive wins, being undefeated and possibly retire undefeated. Who knows? He wants to finish out his contract and move on from there. But again, everything now is in Mayweather's hands, like it's always been in. And this fight is basically the biggest hype job in the world for four years. And for those, in my opinion, who were disappointed in this fight or thought it was boring, my thing is, you should have expected it. If you didn't, shame on you.
And if this thing, if there's a Pacquiao Mayweather 2 and more than 30 people buy this, I would be shocked. Really shocked.
Now, I would watch that too, but at the same time, I don't care what the outcome is.
No. You would have had to have Pacquiao win this one to even have the draw for number two. But again, it's just underwhelming. And I'll tell you one thing. Here's another thing where I go into my world. Something that's been very underwhelming, and I don't care who is an advocate for the NBA. The NBA first round has been the most, besides the Pacquiao Mayweather thing, I think the theme of the show is going to be overhyped, because this NBA playoffs, besides the Clippers and Spurs, oh my God, wake me up till we get to the second round. And now we're starting to see some good matchups, but that first round, all I heard was the Western Conference, that's going to be the matchups. And then all I heard is the Western Conference, finally we're going to see these games, stay up late, watch these games. No. It's been
no. I refuse to. I will not stay up.
No, it's been a huge tell me to do war. That. The Warriors took care of business, and then at the final night of the season, the Spurs messed everything up because they lost to the New Orleans Pelicans, and you had a whole flip flop with the Western Conference, and it just made it unwatchable. And honestly, if you ask me, the Spurs, I have much respect for Popovich. I have respect for Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Ginobili, what they've done with that team. They're a fun team to watch, but they got what they deserved, losing to the Clippers in a classic Game 7. But they got what they deserved, because they did not try winning that last game of the regular season, let New Orleans in, and so the rumors was that they want Oklahoma City to be in the playoffs. Listen, you had the second seed on the line, and you went all the way to 6. To me, it is just amazing how the Spurs blew this, and you know what? I don't feel pity for the Spurs. And you talk about the other playoff series, I think Golden State, I know they're in trouble. They might be in a little bit of trouble in the second round, but I think we're going to go to Golden State, and then the Cleveland Cavaliers are a little bit injured right now with losing Kevin Love, and they have J.R. Smith on suspension because of the incident in Boston. You know, it's the Bulls to take here. So I think at the end of the day, though, I think that it's going to be a Bulls versus Warriors final. And I'm just going to say, it was just underwhelming. It's been an underwhelming playoff so far.
Stupid NBA playoffs. No, but, you know, that's my bitter voice for it. But I can't disagree with you as much as I want to disagree with you for it. But it's true. The NBA playoffs, for all the glory and the spectacle they try to promote it as, besides, and I thought there's some pretty interesting matchups in the first round, but none of them really, I guess that is a theme of the show, has lived up to the hype, besides the LA Clippers and San Antonio Spurs, which kind of got me thinking back of to why in the past, around the 1990s, I would say maybe until maybe 1998, I really enjoyed watching basketball. I enjoyed it because of the competitive nature for it, in terms of a foul was a foul back then, and what I mean by that is that a foul back then was that you were actually physically grabbing onto a guy.
And people actually made free throws.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's a lot of people, too, saying how, they got to get rid of that rule. Listen, make freaking free throws, okay? You're paid not only to make amazing three-pointers, but you got to make free throws. You're there by yourself.
The art of the three throw has so died down that nobody's in front of you. You're standing by yourself to shoot at a basket. Not saying it's easy, but again, it should be something at this point with the skill set it takes to play in the NBA should be automatic.
To me, it's just lack of practice. It's lack of getting in the gym and doing free throws. If I was a head coach, I don't care how unpopular it would be, but there would be free throws at the end of every practice, and I'd be like, listen, if you don't make 10 free throws, we're extending practice by half an hour and stuff like that, because it has to be a focus. I don't want to see the NBA changing something because, like I said, like the coach is circumventing the rule book and finding a loophole. Hey, that happens. Every year, somehow, some way, someone's going to find a loophole. So we're going to try to change every loophole. I mean, come on, give me a break. But again, underwhelming the playoffs. And I know you want to talk about the NHL. NHL, I think, on the other hand, is their season, the playoffs. I think the regular season, you know, it's long, grueling sometimes, but NHL playoffs have been, you know, it's just a different level. And here in New York, of course, we have Rangers Capitals. We wanted to see Rangers Islanders, but the Islanders didn't live up to their end. Rangers are taking New York on a little carpet ride, which might end sooner than later, Ranger fans. But again, I think that the NHL playoffs have just outshined the NBA so far.
Well, it's night and day, because when we compare from this, like when we look at the NBA and we look at the first round, we look at it more as, okay, well, you know, this team's going to beat this team, this team's going to beat this team, and we already look ahead to the second round of what types of matchups they're going to be. For the NHL, it's completely different, because in the NHL, the first round is probably, I wouldn't say a Cinderella story, but it's the most competitive because everybody is so stressed because nobody wants to be a first-round exit. And that's where I think when you look at the NHL, and I say this time and time again, with the NHL, unfortunately, whether it be on... I think it was best when it was on ESPN. When it moved over to OLN, and then it got changed to Versus, and now it's on the NBC Sports Network.
Give credit to NBC, though. They've plugged...
NBC's done a good job, but still, it's not the same thing in terms of production. I don't know what you could do differently to promote NHL any differently, but it's not the same as watching it live and being there. NBA, you can actually enjoy and feel the energy and feel the excitement. For example, a game like Game 7 we saw with the Spurs and the Los Angeles Clippers, you can feel that show itself through the TV screen. It's kind of a different feeling with NHL, but like you said, Jeff, it's night and day for me. The intensity you get with hockey is like no other. To me, and I'll always defend it, it could be because, you know, hockey is probably my favorite sport of all. It's the one type of energy and excitement and types of adrenaline rush you can never replace with anything else. A lot of people say, well, the NCAA tournament's the most difficult thing to win, and an NFL championship's a very difficult thing to win, NBA as well. But to me, the hardest trophy to ever win is the Stanley Cup, for that very reason, that every single person on that bench, whether you're an equipment guy, whether you're an assistant coach, whether you're the crew working on the ice during the, you know, intermissions or during like stoppage times, there's so much stress and tension in that building that you can't, you know,
especially in overtime.
It's an adrenaline
one
exactly
one goal and that's it,
and that's another thing that people get a knock on too, right? The NHL has gone through so much, and Gary Batman, we've had so many strikes in seasons that were never existent for the fact that they've tried to change the rules to make it more offensive. And what's the most exciting thing when it's a one goal game?
You know, the funny thing is, I think people come back to the NHL after the strikes because they don't care about the regular season as long as you don't take their playoffs away.
Yeah.
Because if you make it 30 games, they'll love it because every game is important.
Yeah.
And then you get into the playoffs,
which kind of happened that shortened season. Exactly.
And then you get into the playoffs, and again, it's great, and there's nothing like playoff hockey. So now here's my question to you. Yeah. I'll tell you what.
But would you agree with me on that? That, you know, to me, that's the most difficult tournament of all.
It is.
To me, the NHL playoffs.
Definitely. I stand by it.
I don't like the new playoff format, how you get into the playoffs, like wild card. I don't like that, but that's another debate for another day.
The wild card, I mean, 1-8, please.
1-8.
Thank you, Winnipeg.
It wasn't broken.
Thank you, Atlanta, for free.
No, yeah, Atlanta, I was going to say, Atlanta.
Jerks.
Screwed it over.
But I'll tell you what, where Gary Bettman's got a dilemma. Winnipeg, hey, we got...
Jerks.
You messed up our playoff system. The only thing that bothers me is... There's a problem here, because if you were the NHL right now, what playoffs would you want? What Stanley Cup final would you want? Last year, they did great with the Kings and the Rangers, got LA and New York, but right now with the playoff teams that are in this, what do you think would be the ideal matchup the NHL would love to see?
Well, I don't know if I said this during the show, but I think I mentioned it to you obviously a number of times. To me, it's Chicago and New York.
Yeah, could you imagine if they get Tampa Bay and Anaheim?
Oh my God.
That would be, yeah.
What was it? The Stanley Cup that Tampa Bay was in, weren't they like playing
Calgary?
Calgary.
Yeah,
how horrible was that? Like, everybody, the only reason the NHL was interested in that is because they wanted a Canadian team to actually win the Stanley Cup after it had been so long. But to me, if you're the NHL and you're just a hockey fan, you want to see the two best teams right now. And, you know, granted, the Blackhawks aren't number one in the Western Conference, but
I'm not going to lose sleep if the Rangers don't advance.
No, of course, and I've said it before, and I've said it on the show, this playoffs are for the Rangers to lose, and right now they're not doing a good job of maintaining that. But if you get that type of final, oh, it's going to be amazing. These two teams, you know, they split the series, I believe, in the regular season, and they're just so evenly matched.
What would be the second matchup you think the NHL would like? If the Rangers don't, and they're a little bit of a trouble in this series with the Capitals, what would you think would be the matchup that they would want to see?
Well, it's kind of tough because of the way the playoff format structure in terms of teams already headed in a way in the series, and you're if everything works itself out, my viewpoint would be you have to have the Canadians in there.
There you go.
On the Western Conference, I have to say the only way this lives up to the billing, and it wouldn't work well in North America, would probably be maybe if Calgary advanced. So you'd have Calgary against Montreal.
I was thinking original six. I was like, if you had Chicago and Montreal, I still think that would be a watchable Stanley Cup final.
Oh, no, yeah, I would put it in there, but I'm just saying in terms of promoting it, in terms of hockey pure. We see pure. I say
pure. I'm talking about ratings though.
Blackhawks. I mean, the Blackhawks. I mean, but I was doing the opposite. If the Blackhawks somehow were to be eliminated, who else is out there to be a nice matchup? So yeah, I would love to watch the Canadiens and the Blackhawks. But at the same time, if I'm picking some other team in the Western Conference, you know, I've been a little fan of Minnesota. I think they're an up and coming team, but you know, I would probably say maybe Calgary's kind of like a Cinderella team right now. I expect them to make the playoffs.
I think the Rangers are gonna blow a golden opportunity to win the cup this year, because I don't think Chicago's as strong. I think the goaltender's better, and I think that sounds like I'm crying. And I think that Anaheim, again, you got a question of their goaltending.
Yeah.
I just think the Rangers can out-physical any team in the Western Conference this year. And if they don't turn things around in Washington, it's going to be a wasted opportunity for the Rangers, because last year they came back from 3-1. We will find out if they can do it again this year.
Well, here's the thing, too. A lot of people, not a lot of people, but I'm sure Ranger fans were thinking, oh, it would have been great to play against the Islanders, because I'm sure the NHL would have loved
Islanders blew that one story. Oh, Islanders blew that one. Oh, my God.
And maybe some people were overlooking.
11 shots on goal the whole game seven.
Some people probably maybe overlooking the Washington Capitals, thinking maybe it was because the Islanders had the inability of scoring. But, you know, give a lot of credit to Washington Capitals, because you know, a high scoring team like the Islanders were could barely score a goal in the last two games of that series, and now they're doing a good job against the Rangers.
He's been
staying on his head.
Exactly, he's been a godsend for that team. And Rangers got to score. I mean, they've scored well in the regular season. They got to score. Nash, they got to step it up. St. Louis, I mean, they just got to, you know, score. Nash, I mean, I know you had 42 goals in the regular season, and you only have one. Yeah, you got to step it up. Now, I've been a bigger Nash supporter than anybody, but it's about time. You need to like either score or do something, or get a big hit or do something where we know you're on the ice.
And this isn't an attack on the Rangers specifically, but anytime you've had like a Presidents Trophy Cup winner, they've scored the most points in the world, and comes to the playoffs, and goals are few and far between. It's not in terms of what's the best team out there. To me, it's always been, especially the last few seasons, what team's the hottest going in. And right now, Washington has been kind of a momentum streak right now. Well, I'm not saying they're gonna make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, but teams that have that ability and that kind of confidence within themselves. And then you have teams like the Rangers, or teams like maybe Chicago, for example, if they're in the risk of being eliminated, they have everything to lose.
It's amazing.
And these teams have nothing to lose.
It's amazing, because in basketball you could be hot, but you can't maybe duplicate it in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But if you're a hockey team, and this is why you're more together, it's 25 guys, right?
Yeah.
I think that's where you become a team. And this is a great point. I heard Joe Micheletti earlier on today, and he made a great point. In talking to Barry Trotz, the coach of the Capitol, he said, the first 25 games, I had to instill my system, and things were crazy. The next 25, we had to work. We had to do the system. Then the other things, we had to buy in, and we had to go all at it. And then when we got to the end of the season, we got it right, and we're going into the playoffs, and you know, we're more together than anything.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point. I think that is a amazing point made by Joe Micheletti. I think that teams get hot in the playoffs in hockey. I think that's where you see it the most in hockey, where a team gets hot, they can take it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. Look at the Kings a couple years ago, and last year they wrote it. Eighth seed, whatever, and that's what makes the NHL playoffs amazing. And I know the start of the baseball season.
Talking about playoffs, it's such an amazing thing. You know, a team that's been out of the playoffs for several years now, 3 years in a row, have been, you know, one of my favorites, the New Jersey Devils. And now you just talked about systems and how it takes a while to implement it. You said the first 25 games, you learn it, 25, you're doing it, and then you move on into the playoffs. Now we're in if you're a New Jersey Devil fan, you know, we've seen the end of eras, basically. My childhood is officially gone away, because, you know, not only have you missed the greats like Scott Stevens, Ken Danico, Scott Niedermeyer, and now Martin Brodeur, who is officially retired now, but now somebody who's been there since 1987, the general manager of the New Jersey Devils, Lou Lamoriello, has stepped aside, literally basically fired himself and given the reins over.
I think it was time.
Yeah.
I mean, give him credit, because he realized that it just, his way just was not going to keep working, and they had to find somebody who had an offensive mind, You know, I give him credit for getting the Kovalchuks and trying to keep Parisi and trying to sign these guys. But, you know, you keep signing middle-aged forwards, you have to count on the draft to find scoring. And I think Lou's done a good job as far as drafting defensive players.
Oh, yeah.
But I think you need a guy in there that's going to attack the draft and see it in an offensive-minded way, because you can't keep signing free agents that are in their mid-30s and give them 5-6-year contracts, because you got to bring them to New Jersey. And you need to develop and draft players. I mean, look, I mean, yes, Jacob Josephson, he's finally developed, but he's not going to be the goal scorer you think. He's more of a third line player. Stefan Matteau, again,
we don't know what you can get from him.
He's a big guy, but again, you don't know if you can get more than 10 goals or he's going to be a third line player for you. Reed Boucher. Again, you don't know if he's just going to be a role player, because it's one thing to score in the AHL and in the Ontario Hockey League and stuff like that, but to score in the NHL level, you don't know if he can do that. I think Ray Shiro, I think, though he didn't draft Crosby, he made moves to get into the Stanley Cup Finals.
And he built a team around him.
Yeah, so I think, you know, and again,
but you brought up a great point too about, you know, talking about Reed Boucher and Matteau just for a second. Yeah. The problem why we don't know anything about them right now, as opposed to, like, for example, the defensemen like Severson, like Amaro, like for example, like even a Jakobsen right now too, even offensively, is they haven't gotten the ice time. And you said before, you can't keep getting veterans in or fill in and impede the progress and the growth ability of these defensemen, of these forwards, that you need to know what you have. And now I think under, you know, the new regime here, we're going to find out what we have in a Reed Boucher or Stefan Matteau, and in terms of, you know, Jacob Josephson.
So a couple of things here. There were rumors about Phil Kessel trading the 6th pick. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not going to absorb that kind of contract.
Yeah, and for one person like that, yeah, no.
You're not,
again, doesn't help you in the long run.
You can't just go with one-star player. It just doesn't work that way anymore. And then definitely I think one of the defensemen are going to be trade bait. And then I think with the 6th pick, you're going to go offensive player. You have to find somehow.
They have enough depth, I feel, in their minor league system right now to now say, listen, we have a lot of depth defensively here. We got to start moving in terms of drafting offensive players, because other than that, you're just going to keep regressing and not have the ability to score goals in this new NHL. You have to score goals.
You got the goalie. As much as he gets maligned by me and Brian, he had a good season. I think if he had a better team around him, he'd have a better season.
Last good move Lou made is he signed Keith Kincaid to an extension.
Keith Kincaid, I think you have a good backup goaltender. I think that's good. And you got to make a decision on the coach. I think Dan Bylsma, I think, could be the next head coach.
That's what I was going to ask you. Would you like him in the system? You think he would fit the system there now? Because the philosophy is not going to change in a way, but the it's going to be more offensive.
If Dan Bylsma is the coach, then I know that Ray Shiro is his regime, because I know Lou's going to still, you know, Ray Shiro said that he wants to still keep the defensive and not destroy the defense in light of the offense, which is a Lemieux thing. But we'll find out if the philosophy changes if he's able to hire a Bylsma. Because if we get maybe a retread, or if we get, you know, a Stevens or Notes, then you know that you have the Devils system in here. As much as I love Scotty Stevens, but you know that you have the Devils philosophy, and they have to get away from it now. That worked in the 90s, early 2000s. But this is, they get younger, they get faster, and it's all about the O. And speaking about the O, MLB, we will talk about MLB. We will talk about, well, we'll play some quick hits too. So we'll involve MLB quickly and quick hits when we come back. Here's in the High Spot, Jeff Martin, Brian Berga. Catch us at High Spot Podcast. We'll be back.
Don't go away. Listening to the High Spot, and Jeff, it's gotta be baseball season because my allergies are killing me now.
Oh my god, it's been a struggle.
My eyes are bee red, and it's not because I'm exhausted, it's just because the pollen is in the air.
You gotta try these nose drops though, honestly.
Do they work?
These nose drops, my nose is clear. My eyes are hurting because I don't take, you know, I don't like anyone put anything in my eyes.
No.
Okay, I'm very anal about it and very, very, you know.
Well, I've tried many times, but drops in your eyes for you. It's been a fight.
Yeah, and so you really got to try these nose drops because they'll really work on your nose.
I also heard there's a thing where it's kind of like a tea kettle. And you put it in your nostrils and it flows through. I was told about a mutual friend. I can't find it anywhere. I keep forgetting what it's called.
Yeah, but we need to attack that before it ruins your whole spring because the pollen is in the air. But not only is pollen in the air.
Something else is going to ruin my spring, too.
So is MLB. Be in. Brian, your early take on the season. I know here in New York it's been great.
It's too long.
Because the Yankees and the Mets are in first place. You know, the Yankees doing it with their offense and their pitching. I know they lost Tanaka for a little bit, but they're doing it.
It might be more than a little bit.
Yeah, with Pineda and CC Bethia's maybe turn it around right now. Didn't look good in the Subway Series, but again, you guys, beat us, and that is the Mets, and the Mets are doing
well. I wasn't going to mention it, but since you said it, Jeff, too, yes, everybody was early in the season talking about the Mets. You had the Mike Garvey, Harvey special on ESPN.
Hey, don't knock Matt Harvey, okay? Matt Harvey's probably there's a lot of bright spots on the Mets, but Harvey, not Garvey. Has been the
well, I would see a special catalyst on either one of those guys because I think both of those guys are fascinating, in my opinion. But yes, you're right. But the whole Dark Knight thing and the whole team being centered around him and Javi. I'm sorry if I offended Javi for you. Oh, Javi,
love
geez.
Harvey.
Oh,
love
Javi. I can't believe I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset Javi fans there.
But I mean, look, New York's had a tough has had a tough winter with the Jets, Giants, and then. The Knicks, Rangers, who knows, their journey might end pretty soon. But talk about baseball and spring and a little rejuvenation. The draft came out, and now we're dealing with MLB, and both teams are in first place. But
I think the Mets have cooled down a little bit. They had a great streak.
Yankees kind of put them into reality.
Well, not just that, but in the reality. I think any good team, and I think the Mets are a very good team right now. They have a couple injuries, that kind of suspectly happened.
David Wright,
it's a foregone conclusion. He's always going to be on the DL, unfortunately.
Now, what do you think? You think David Wright now is like every season he's like an injury waiting to happen. You cross your fingers when he comes back.
I look at him more like Mark Teixeira.
Don't get hurt coming out of the bus or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing you're scared about. I mean, David Wright is no longer a young spring chicken.
Yeah.
I don't know why I use that analogy, but it seemed to work here.
Well, spring and chicken, I'm pretty sure that.
Yeah, and maybe I was hungry. Who knows? But he's not a young guy anymore, and so he's going to be more susceptible to that as the seasons go by and he's under contract with the Mets or whatever team he's playing for. So I think that's just it. I think if he was in the American League, it wouldn't be such a big deal because he's the kind of guy. I don't think David Wright's an everyday player anymore, in my opinion.
Interesting.
So we can dive into that maybe a little bit later, and maybe as the season goes by,
we'll see how it looks.
But the Mets have cooled down a little bit, but I still think they have a great core behind them. The Yankees have been a big surprise for me, and I'm a Yankee fan, but it's been a big surprise because I went into the season unlike seasons before, and it's been quite a while since I've had any expectations for this team.
Had no expectations for the Yankees.
And I really didn't have any expectations for this team. I was thinking A-Rod's coming back. Okay, if he's somewhat good as a DH, maybe you can sustain having him there. But in terms of pitching, in terms of these teams, it's kind of a who's who type of thing. And it's nice to see that this team is actually trying to become what has been lacking for so many years, not just an all-star group of players, but a team.
You know what I'm proud about?
What
I'm proud about,
What are you proud of?
Do you know what I am?
Tell me.
Because you have a guy in Adam Ronis. I love Adam. Mr. Miyagi.
Oh, you can call him Mr. Miyagi. He's the fantasy wizard.
But I asked him on episode 6, I go, Adam, A-Rod, where would he be considered if you were drafting a fantasy team? I was like, would he be a bench player or whatever? And he's like, well, you can't expect anything out of A-Rod right now. And he'd probably be a guy you would stash. Well, I would have drafted A-Rod. And look at A-Rod right now. The average is not there. He had a hot streak. But I think at the end of the season, he's going to be your best player. And I think, well, Ellsbury aside, let's talk about as far as like a power hitter.
Yeah.
I'm going to say you're going to get 20 home runs and about 80, 95 RBIs. And to me.
But that's a high risk. That's a high risk hoping for a high reward, though.
To me, Adam Ronis, that is draftable. Putting it out there.
Wow.
Just putting it out there.
Somebody's face is red. But, not, like I said, whatever beef you have with Adam Ronis.
No beef.
I know, I'm joking.
Saying, where's my fantasy show?
You should do a show with him and Lee Sand, who have both graciously been on the show before and have given us. And, believe it or not, I actually, I was following Lisa on Twitter, is at the Real Lisa Ann, and she's basically actually it's her first year, and I'm kind of jealous of her. She's actually first place in her league.
Yeah, I'll tell you, some people just have a charmed life.
Yeah, I mean, just in baseball, such a hard thing to get to in terms of fantasy. It's just so many changes there too. But in terms of the actual Major League Baseball too, it's I still think we're in May, right? It's still fairly early, but I think you're starting to see where the deficiencies lie on certain teams.
So, like, what's your early surprise? Your early take on the baseball
season?
My
biggest surprise, and I have to admit that it's, you know, still fairly early. I kind of catch the season more towards the late end, but I have been watching a lot of it. It's hard not to because it's around
it's
all the
fun,
time.
It's fun though, Brian. Here's the thing: this is where we differentiate. Fun. To me, I love being able to come home a hard day and know that baseball's on every day.
You have the ability to get up and be like, you know what's on TV. I just want to go to sleep.
But you don't whine about the job.
No, I'm not whining about the job. I'm always tired. But I catch it. I'm watching it still. It's fun. Especially sometimes, like you said, Jeff has it. You have the uncanny knack. You tell me sometimes during like the spring when the weather's warm, early afternoons, and like turn on the baseball game. It's nice outside. Grab a cold beer and, you know, enjoy it.
It's just summer and spring, and that to me I relate sports to the seasons, so I'm very, as soon as the weather starts getting better and you see the leaves turning and you think of spring, so you think of baseball and all that. But again, your biggest take from the season so far?
Well, from what I've seen, the biggest take I have is the Houston Astros have had an incredible start to the season, and I always thought it was kind of weird because I thought they were going to struggle in the American League after they came in from the National League.
No, they did. 101 seasons.
If you're an Astro fan or just a baseball fan, you didn't think there's much of an upside here. They showed glimpses of a good, strong team that kind of looked on the verge of doing something, but you were kind of thinking that's maybe a couple of years from now or a couple seasons from now, and they have just kind of, you know, they're playing with house money, basically.
All the young players are contributing. Jose Altuve, a great second baseman, really leading the charge. And again, all their young guys are hitting. They're hitting and they're pitching.
And although we're in May, what I always feel that, you know, and the Mets have proven this too, although they're kind of cooling down a little bit, which all teams do in the season.
You won 11 in a row, you're going to get spoiled. So,
exactly.
You know.
And even though they've lost 10, you know, it's still early, folks. And I'm sure the Mets have enough, you know, leadership in that clubhouse to kind of bounce back, especially with Javi as the leader of that team.
And the good thing about the Mets is they were deep, so when they lost players, they were able to plug in. Like, as far as Darno, freak injury, but Plawecki's played well, so they've been able to. And this is why you don't trade pitching and young talent for nothing, for like Tulowitzki, because now in the long run you need that talent to help you up. So,
but the Mets have been doing what I think the Astros were doing, what the Mets did early on, is that. Mm-hmm. I told you before, a great team, timely hitting. Winning the games you probably shouldn't win or they were close, and then you do that.
Once you know you're a good team, is those games you're not supposed to win, you start winning those. That's when you become
And then
a good
the confidence
team.
Builds up, and then the team starts believing in itself. Yeah. Biggest disappointment in my mind right now has been the Milwaukee Brewers.
Oh, and they fired Ron Reneke.
Yeah.
And they're blowing this whole thing up.
I mean, it's a point where it's like we talk about how early it is in May, but right now they're in a downward spiral. It doesn't look like it can stop the momentum from you know, these losing streaks that they're getting. So they're definitely going completely in the wrong direction.
And my take is the Nationals, they should have been, you know, with all the hoopla with Strasburg and Scherzer and Gio Gonzalez and Doug Fister, that having a deep rotation and Zimmerman included too. They just have not been playing well. They've been underachieving, and right now, you know, they found themselves looking up at the Mets, and I know it's early, but you're still thinking, wow, this is a team that should have fired early, you know, out of the gates, should have started much better than they are now, and I know they finally scored some runs for Scherzer today, but again, this is another team that's struggling, and to me, I would say another story is Josh Hamilton. He just recently got traded to the Rangers, got traded back. I guess the story is, I mean, they really don't tell you the whole story in Anaheim and why he had to leave. Basically, Anaheim's playing the whole paying the whole contract, and, you know, Rangers aren't even giving up a player. But really, things really got dark for Josh Hamilton, and I think, you know, not only because I, you know, picked him off waivers on my fantasy team thinking he's going to make some contributions, but as a human being, I really hope he gets his life turned around and is able to salvage his career, because, you know, he's had struggles, and you don't want him to, you know, to fall back off. I know he's going through divorce, So my question is, and what I want to see is if Josh Hamilton can resurrect his career and salvage it with Texas. I think he should have never left anyways. I think he should have stayed there with the support system in Texas. But I think those
Yeah, but when money's thrown around that way, you're gonna jump for the money though, aren't you?
I know, and I thought he was I thought he had gotten past his demons, but once you're an addict and once you know you've fallen off, like, you never really fully cured. And again, we just hope that Josh Hamilton will see better days in MLB, because this is a guy who, you know, you root for and you don't want bad things to happen, because he's had to go through so much, and now that he's back, you know, hopefully he can resurrect his career with baseball. But again,
I share your sentiment, Jeff. You know, you hope Josh Hamilton resurrects his career, but I'm of the mindset here, and I don't want to be taken as a cold-hearted guy here, but you know, when you're given opportunities after opportunities, and I understand that, you know, with addiction, it's very difficult to, you know, sustain from that, because it's always a constant struggle every single time. But at the same time, let's call it how it is. Josh Hamilton's a grown man, and he can make his own decisions as well. So as much as sometimes you want to feel sorry and hope, you know, and we do hope he gets the help and he gets the support system he wants, and he's dealing with a lot of stress. Like I said, he's handling a divorce. But at the same time, you're a grown adult, and you have to be responsible with your own actions. And there reaches a point too with how many more times do you get a second chance, in a way. I'm not saying that, you know, a team should boycott him and he should be, you know, boycotted from the league and people should turn their back on him. No. I'm just saying, how many times are you going to say, oh, I feel bad for him?
But he openly went to baseball and said, you know, decisions. I fell off the wagon. So he actually came up to them and said, I messed up. So, again.
And I credit him for that, but at the same time, I can't feel too bad, because I'm like,
you're just cold-hearted.
No, I'm not, Jeff. No, I'm not. Stop it.
You're a cold-hearted guy. That's fine. But you know what?
Well, at least I admit it. I'm like Tom Brady, which I'm a softie, okay?
I'm a global softie.
I'm a realist, okay? In everything I do, I'm a realist.
Now, you talk about having consequences for your own actions. Well,
what did I do?
This next game, okay, it definitely has, well, I'm not going to say it was on video before, because that'll just get us in trouble.
Okay.
But we can play quick hits, and there's ramifications for your answers, because where I'm expected to get good quality, solid answers from you.
Wait. You expect, like, I haven't been giving you good quality answers?
No, I'll tell you, episode 10,
are you saying that?
You were slacked off, and I expected it to be the best show because it was the 10th episode, but you slobbered all over it. You poo pooed it. And hopefully I get better results this time.
And what way did I poo-poo this?
Oh, you know what it was.
Poo-poo comes out when you get poo-poo answers, okay?
You're all Tom Brady-ish about it. You thought you were better than the questions.
Well, I am better than the questions. What's wrong with that? It's confidence, isn't it? You have to have confidence when you're on the air.
So you're
I have
cocky.
Confidence when I'm this. No. It's the difference between cocky, Jeff, and being confident. When I'm on this microphone, to some people, it's just a microphone. To me, it is a tool that I use to express my opinions and to show the world out there that's listening to the High Spot, and hit us up on Twitter at High Spot Podcast.
Good plug there.
For the people out there. Of course, see, you can't teach that. And I have the ability to do that and give you my opinion. Now, if you don't like my opinion, there's nothing I can do about it. If you think it's not a good answer, well, you know, that's your perspective.
And that's why
all my answers are awesome.
You should hit us up on it and let us know what you think.
I can't wait till I turn this around to you. There will be next week, we'll do where I'm giving you the quick hits, and I see how you do under the pressure.
If you can find 4 questions, I will give you $50.
I'll pay up now. I don't want those in singles and quarters and Canadian dollars.
Hey, money's money. Okay?
Don't give me soles.
All right, quick hits. Here we go. Now, talking about the Pacquiao Mayweather fight, something interesting happened where Michelle Beadle and Rachel Nichols were denied credentials to the fight.
Okay. I heard about this.
And then I'll tell you this. Now, I give here's the thing where I'm going to be kind of insensitive, but it's our show and I get to voice my opinion.
I'm bitter at her for two things, not only for the boxing.
I'll get into this. So I'll tell you the whole spiel, right? So basically, Michelle Beadle likes to go on Twitter and stand up for everything, which is her right. She speaks her mind. She's gone on people like Stephen A. Smith about the whole Ray Ray situation on the NFL. That's fine, okay? And your intelligent opinion, and of course, you know, you're a female and you have to stand up for those things. Rachel Nichols had Floyd Mayweather on her show, kind of talked to him about the whole domestic abuse, which is at her right. She's well deserved to do that. It's her show. She's expected to get a runaround answer by Mayweather, which again, it's his right. But then to be surprised that you don't expect Mayweather to be petty or anybody from his camp to not remember these quotes, you know what? You're being naive. And was it right for Mayweather to cut off their credentials? I don't think so. But for them to, like, you know, tweet out, oh, woe is me, I can't get into a boxing fight where everybody would, you know, give their left pinky before knowing the outcome of the fight was going to happen, to me, eh, I don't want to hear it. And then Michelle Beadle getting on her platform and talking about Triple H and giving up the WWE because they're friends with Mayweather. So you can't be friends with the guy now? Everybody has to disassociate from this guy? I think, you know what? Enough. Like, you want to make a point? Quit ESPN, because they still have guys like Stephen A. Smith that were misquoted. They have a lot of people that cover Manny Pacquiao. So, you know what? Want to get on your high horse? Do something about it. Quit ESPN. I don't see you doing that. Michelle Beadle, I mean, enough. What do you think of this whole situation?
Wow. I don't know if we have enough time to discuss how I feel about that. I'm more prone to what Michelle Beadle said. Rachel Nichols, I didn't see the interview she had with Mayweather, but I did know she pressed him hard on the topics.
Which is
of
fine. It's her show. It's her right to do that.
She's a journalist. Michelle Beadle's done the same thing, asking him Mayweather questions about that too. But to me, it just sounds like bitter grapes. And here's the thing that I dislike the most. I mean, you and I, Jeff, we come on the podcast, The High Spot, and we voice our opinions, we voice our views, and sometimes they're not the most popular things in the world, but we stand by them, as with anything, and we use that as, how you said, a platform, right? But when, I just hate this ability that, you know, whether it be celebrity or journalist or whatever the case might be, that people go out there and they feel that, you know, going on Twitter or Instagram or on Facebook or whatever gives you the ability, yes, you have the right to voice your opinion, but you do not have within that platform to put somebody down. I mean, look, we're talking about Tom Brady and Deflategate, right? I'm telling you my opinions and what I think about it. But am I saying the NFL should boycott Tom Brady and Tom Brady should be suspended and all the Super Bowls should be taken away from Tom Brady? But no, I'm not, because that's not my job. I'm giving you my opinion. I think, you know, this tarnishes his legacy, yada, yada, yada. In this case, with Mayweather and Mayweather Promotions, you know, if that's what they did, then that's a shady thing to do. But at the same time, I don't hold it against them, because then what did you expect, Michelle Beadle? What did you expect, Rachel Nichols?
Childish and petty.
Exactly. Do you not know the man? Do you not know that if you do this, you know what? If I try to embarrass you on national television, I try to catch you on something, right, that's not going to fall back on you. So for Michelle Beadle to go on and talk about things like that, and then more importantly, give up the WWE. I'm sure the WWE is going to miss her because she's had great altercations with the WWE.
I refuse getting freebies from you. I refuse getting front row seats to WrestleMania because I'm proving a point. Wow.
I wonder how long she can give that up. Seriously. Because, like, the WWE is not losing anything.
Get
on
off
her.
Your high horse,
ESPN
Beadle.
Will still cover the WWE. You don't have to have Michelle Beadle. Actually, Michelle Beadle should have been thankful she was actually there when Brock Lesnar was going to announce his big announcement that he had re-signed with the WWE for 3 more years. Michelle Beadle should have been grateful for that. But no, not because Triple H, Paul Levesque, has associated himself with Floyd Mayweather and their friends.
Who knows if they hang out every day? I can't be friends with the guy. The guy's got to be ostracized. Look, I know Mayweather, what he did with women and everything, it's scumbaggish.
Yeah, and we're not condoning that.
I don't like the guy personally, but for him to be ostracized and be, like, put in isolation, I mean, give me a break. I mean, the fact the guy went to jail for that, I'm sure he's done. I mean, there's other stuff.
Why did she attack Justin Bieber then? Justin Bieber walked them down the aisle, so now everybody's gonna boycott and people are not gonna buy albums. Now, you shouldn't buy Justin Bieber albums to begin with because they suck.
And I don't know how much. And I don't
know, they boycott Justin Bieber.
I don't know how much of a UFC fan she is. I don't know how much of a UFC fan she is. But Jon Jones just hit a lady in a car,
broke her arm.
Yeah. It was a pregnant woman.
Pregnant woman
walked out. And come on. So I mean, I know Dana White did the right thing, stripped him of the title and suspended him indefinitely. But I mean, so what? If he ever gets back in the ring or octagon again, you're going to boycott that?
If Jon Jones has a party, invites Rachel Nichols or Michelle Beadle, for example, because Michelle Beadle is always fans with the UFC fighters, and he invites her and she goes to a party, isn't she now like accepting and kind of supporting the fact that he did a hit and run?
Or drunk driving.
It's the same thing. So that's what irritates me the most about things like that. They spew that crap on the internet, especially, and think that, you said, they're on this high horse and think they're the, you know, revolting, like, I'm the only one that's willing enough to stand up and speak and sacrifice and risk my job. Well, you know, if you don't like it so much, if you don't like working for ESPN, if they associate themselves with Floyd Mayweather, if you don't like the WWE so much, then you know what? Best of luck making some money and, you know, getting a life. You know, go work for a smaller, affiliate station that's going to cover local news, which you've been doing when you first started in the business, and stop complaining.
You know, she got such a big head when she became famous from Sports Nation. And then I liked her better when she was doing Nets games, when she was here working for Yes and everything like that. But again, I don't mind that you're speaking your opinion, but to camp, you know, I understand you didn't get, you know, the credentials, but I mean, I can't feel sorry for you when trying to get into a boxing fight and you're going to boycott WWE, who went hand over feet to, you know, please you and Bill Simmons and, you know, kiss your fanny all these years, right? And for you to give up freebies and free comp tickets, oh, wow, big sacrifice you're making, you know, Michelle Beadle. And again, I get the point. I get your standing for women's rights. I totally agree with that. But then, you know what? There's a bunch of people I wouldn't be friends with or associate myself with just because, you know, they do something that's not agreeable. That's not how this country works. And what's wrong with this country is that we're trying to ostracize people and, you know, for their certain beliefs and stuff like that, where, you know what? To each his own. But again, I don't agree with Mayweather. He's petty, he's childish, but you should have known this was going
to
happen.
And the opposite thing to that, Jeff, is that they basically look back on it, and the story that they spewed out was the fact that the credentials were there. They never were not there.
Well, Twitter kind of had something to do with it. I mean,
yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's like, it's just a back and forth banter, back and forth, that really doesn't make no sense whatsoever. And, you know, for Rachel Nichols and Michelle Beadle to be upset, hey, you have every right to be upset. But again, don't be shocked about it. You knew it was coming. So if you're shocked about it, I think Rachel Nichols handled it maybe a little bit better than Michelle Beadle. Michelle Beadle sounded very bitter.
Wah, wah, wah.
So I'm not tagging very much Rachel Nichols. She can say it if she wanted to. But at the same time, Michelle Beadle, get over it. Stop it. How many more sporting events do you go to in terms of Super Bowls and stuff like that? And plus, they probably did you a favor because this match completely sucked to begin with, the fight. And so what, you're going to waste your time there just because you didn't go to the after parties probably?
And besides Mayweather fighting Big Show at WrestleMania 24, what else has Mayweather done with the WWE recently where so he can't send out a tweet publicly supporting him in his fight against Pacquiao? Give me a break.
It's a fight. It's a boxing fight, okay? We're not going to the personal statistics.
Exactly. I'm not judging. I'm like, oh, wow. He's totally aligned himself with Floyd Mayweather. That's it. I'm boycotting WWE. That is just ridiculous. And you come out petty, in my opinion. And you've been so good here on Quick Hits that the thing is, I'm probably only going to get to one more question, because that question, you kind of made up.
I think it should just end on that right now.
No, I think you kind of made
What's
up
your next
for,
question, Joe?
My last question is,
let me freaking wow you again.
May 2nd, 2015 was an amazing weekend for sports. You had the Rangers playoff game. You had the Kentucky Derby. You still remember that, huh?
Yes.
You had the Kentucky Derby. You had the Game 7 Clippers and Spurs. And you also had the Pacquiao fight in Mayweather. Can you think of, at the top of your head, any other day that's been that much that you've been anticipating that's been a sports day?
No, not off the top of my head. Next question.
Oh, you totally just wish-washed this question.
Oh, wish what? You asked me, did I, yes or no? You want an answer? I said no. Next question. What, you want me to elaborate? Oh yeah, Jeff, when I was 15 years old, I remember back in, you know, 1998, that, you know, I love. No, I do not remember another day that probably happened.
I thought you were going to say 2003. It was a summer and it was Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, and it was the Devils and the Ducks. But again, I get no.
Yeah, that's one sport. Now you're flipping it on me.
No, I flipped it on you. I'm flipping it on you.
Exactly. Typical woman, Jeff. Oh, you like that? You like that? Hit us up on the High Spot Podcast on Twitter.
That was Quick
Hits. But,
I got to go because I've just been totally verbally abused. So I got to go. Get ready for episode 12. Get ready for our wrestling segment that's coming on here. Our wrestling segment.
But all right, let me flip it on you real quick, okay? Since it's going to be a short answer anyway. From you, because Jeff's a very short and sweet guy. But what was the last time you remember an event where had all these things happen at the same time that you were looking forward to? Now, granted, maybe you're not into horse racing, but it's a nice spectacle to watch the Kentucky Derby. You had the Pacquiao Mayweather fight later on that night. You had baseball, you had basketball, playoffs. You had, you know, the NHL playoffs. I mean, yeah, it was kind of a selection of who's who of sports if you wanted to choose from. Do you remember another time that you had that ability to do it?
I plead the fifth because I asked you that question. No, I can't remember a time because...
Boom!
Can't remember a time because, you know what? It's rare, few and far between, that you get days like this. So, you know, you savor these days. And I enjoyed my Saturday as much as the Pacquiao fight in Mayweather kind of let me down. The only good thing I would say was the Clippers and the Spurs. A great Game 7. That was deflating.
Oh. We went there, folks. And you're listening to the Yeah, and you're listening to The High Spot. It's he is Jeff Martin. I am Brian Berga. We'll catch you next week, folks, for episode 12. Hit us up on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Again, my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. I am Brian Berga. This is The High Spot. Catch you later, folks.
I'm going to pay the bills for the AC in here. God.